You're listening to The Horn, the head-on radio network.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush, meeting with congressional leaders this morning, is pledging to consider their ideas as he searches for a new strategy for Iraq. He's expected to make an announcement about his decision before Christmas. A new AP Ipsos poll shows that 71% of Americans are dissatisfied with President Bush's handling of the war in Iraq. The poll also shows that only 9% expect a clear-cut victory in Iraq, while 87% say they believe there will be some sort of compromise settlement. Those numbers parallel the results of a similar poll taken in 1965 regarding the Vietnam War. There are conflicting reports regarding an overnight raid and airstrike in a northern Iraq village, which the U.S. military says resulted in the deaths of 18 men and 2 women, all of them suspected al-Qaeda operatives. But Iraqi officials say the total number of dead was 32, and it included 8 women and 6 children. Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld holds his final so-called town hall meeting at the Pentagon today to say goodbye to colleagues as he prepares to step down. He'll be replaced by Robert Gates on December 18th. The first woman to serve as U.S. ambassador to the United Nations has died. Jean Kirkpatrick was 80 years old. The leader of Hezbollah is calling for a massive anti-government demonstration Sunday in Beirut. Today marks the 7th, the consecutive day of street protests by Hezbollah supporters who are calling for the resignation of the Lebanese prime minister in favor of a unity government in which Hezbollah will have a bigger role. A group of 42 Guantanamo Bay detainees has become the first to move into a new $37 million maximum security prison there, designed to restrict contact between the prisoners. NASA will try again tomorrow night to launch the space shuttle Discovery for a 12-day mission to rewire the electrical system on the International Space Station. Last night's scheduled launch was postponed due to cloudy weather. Oregon authorities say that James Kim, the San Francisco man who got lost in the snowy wilderness while trying to save his stranded family, died from hypothermia, though they aren't sure when. His body was found on Wednesday, 5 days after leaving his family in their snowbound car on a remote road. Ironically, his wife and 2 small daughters were found and rescued on Monday. The Republican-led 109th Congress is adjourning after working just 103 days this year, the shortest legislative calendar in 60 years. Before they adjourn, lawmakers will take up tax and trade legislation as well as a bill to fund federal programs through February. And the investigation into the radiation poisoning death of former KGB spy Alexander Litvinenko in London is widening. Detectives now say as many as 10 people may have been exposed to radioactive polonium-210 at a London hotel bar where he met with a former Russian spy and a Russian businessman. This is QNN.
Monterey is the home of a new national radio voice. It's America Back on Track from the Quality News Network. Tune in weekdays at noon Pacific to this new national broadcast, a conversation with America designed to get our country back on track. America Back on Track features local and long-distance guests sharing global ideas on where we are, how we got here, where we want to go, and how we might get there. So take an hour out of your day to plug into the future, our future. Discover the solutions to the problems that have gridlocked our nation for all too long. Eschew the agenda-driven palaver of the left and the right. Tune into America Back on Track for honest talk about the important issues and how they can be resolved. America Back on Track, weekdays at noon on KRML, 1410 a.m. in the Monterey area, and streaming live online at QNNAmerica.com. America Back on Track, our ticket to a healthy and productive future.
The E. coli outbreak connected to Taco Bell's in the Northeast has now spread south and west, with the inclusion of South Carolina and Utah, making a total of 7 states where nearly 100 people have been confirmed as having E. coli. At least 35 have been hospitalized. Federal investigators are still trying to pinpoint the exact cause, but they are looking at green onions after lab tests indicated they could be the source. So far, one lawsuit has been filed in connection with the outbreak. U.S. payrolls increased by 132,000 last month. That's an improvement over October and better than expected, but the unemployment rate was high, edging up to 4.5%. Walmart's half-billion-dollar advertising account is again up for grabs. The company just fired its newly hired agency after learning that the Walmart exec who steered the company towards that agency had been accepting gifts from companies competing for the contract. She's now been fired, and the bidding begins all over again. Sony has just launched its new high-definition DVD recorder in Japan. It's called the Blu-ray Machine. And baseball's Barry Bonds, who's within 22 home runs of breaking Hank Aaron's all-time record, has agreed to return to the Giants for for one more year for $16 million. Gold is trading at $640.70 an ounce this hour, up nearly $4. Silver's at $14.11. Light sweet crude up 81 cents, trading at $63.30 a barrel. On Wall Street, all the markets are slightly higher. The Dow Jones is up 12 points at 12,290. NASDAQ is up 2 at 2429, and the S&P 500 is also up 2 at 1408. More at QualityNewsNetwork.com.
Live from Chicago, the city with many names, it's the Cup of Joe Radio Show. 2 hours of truth and fury representing the fighting spirit of the American worker. And now, through the miracle of screaming audio, here's the guy your bosses hate, the Windy City's biggest windbag, your host, Joe Vecchio.
All right, thank you, Bob. It is a beautiful but cold day here in the Windy City, Chicago. According to the Chicago Tribune, the temperature out there is 12 degrees. 12 degrees, which is actually a little bit cold, just a little bit chilly. I've been dealing with it pretty well, though. And, you know, it's funny because if the Chicago Tribune reported the weather the way they report the news, they just ask three or four people what the temperature is and balance it out, so to speak. How is everybody doing? I'm Joe Vecchio, and I'm not going to be late for work today. I was almost late for work the other day because I was running late doing the show. And I thought I was going to be late, and actually left a little later and wound up getting there a little earlier. Don't ask me. The CTA is really, really weird. I can get downtown in 45 minutes if I catch the bus as soon as I get to the stop, and if I catch the train as soon as I get off the bus. But, you know, usually when it takes me the hour, an hour and 15 minutes, it usually does, at least a half an hour of that is just waiting. And for those of you who are transportation, you know exactly what I'm talking about. But it is very cold up here. But it's one of those days, it's been a couple of those days where it's been really, really sunny. So if you looked out the window, and except for the snow, obviously, because we had a big snowfall on Friday, except for the snow and ice, you would never know how cold it was because it's such a bright, beautiful, sunny day. And let me tell you, you know, all you people who live in warm weather environments, and I know because I lived in Atlanta for 12 years, for those of you who are not familiar with what happens after it snows, I mean, that snow does not stay as powder, okay? What happens is the actual layer of snow, the top layer of snow, actually acts as an insulator. So the bottom part of it is a little bit warmer than it is on the top. I'm not saying that it's warm, but it's warmer. And a lot of times what happens is that the snow underneath melts and becomes ice. And not only does it become ice, but it becomes really, really hard ice. I mean, you really can't imagine it. I mean, you used to buy, you know, these blocks of ice in the supermarket, you know, where you got to smash them up and stuff like that. But that's blocks that are like it's crushed ice that kind of comes melted together. You get a block of solid ice, and you're sitting at temperatures at like, you know, 12, 13 degrees like we are now here in Chicago. And, you pick up a piece of ice and you hold it in your hand, and it's harder than rock. It's like iron. You know? Iron. And you throw it to the ground and it doesn't break. It hits the cement and it doesn't break. You chip it a little bit on the end. That's hard. And it's slippery. If you walk on it, it's slippery. If people do not shovel their sidewalks immediately after a snow, you cannot walk on that sidewalk until that ice melts away because it's slippery and it's dangerous. And you slip and fall and you whack your head on that, I mean, you could be knocked unconscious. And it gets cold enough. I mean, I work at 11 o'clock at night. I get off work at 11 o'clock at night. And I don't get in generally until like midnight. Okay, 12:15, 12:30, something like that, depending on how late I leave for work, right? If I were to slip and fall and fall on my head, you know, slip backwards and hit my head and get knocked unconscious, there's a good possibility I could lay there until I die, unless somebody comes along and sees it and calls an ambulance or something. In fact, we've had 5 deaths linked to the cold here in Chicago, or at least in theory linked to the cold. I wouldn't be surprised. We have a lot of homeless people here. Hang on a second. Just opened up a new bottle of water. My throat's not as bad as it was on Tuesday when I was filling in for Dr. Bill. And if you've tuned in expecting to find Dr. Bill, no, the doctor doesn't show up on Fridays. He doesn't show up on Mondays and Fridays. He does Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays. And when he can't make it because of other obligations, I fill in for him. Dang it, what was I saying? Oh, yeah. There are people, when people pass away like that, and it's mostly homeless people, obviously, I feel really, really bad because, quite frankly, I don't see any reason in this country for people to be homeless in the first place. I mean, we're the richest country in the world, for crying out loud. Surely we can do better by these people. And a lot of it happened when Reagan, you know, that SOB, he emptied each side. Well, we don't want to pay for these, mental hospitals. So they emptied all these people out on into the streets, you know, where if they were in the hospitals, at least, okay, granted, it wasn't the best conditions in the world, but at least they'd have a bed and it would be warm and they'd get some sort of care. I mean, I'm not going to say that the place was, you know, a perfectly one institution. I'm sure there was a lot of things going on. But damn it, it's got to be dying of cold in the street. You know? And scumbags like Neil Bortz, they laugh at that. They think it's funny. Oh, yeah, yeah, good. Get rid of the homeless people, you know? Screw you, Neil. I'd like to send you out there. I'd like to bring your ass up here right now and strip you of your clothes and sit you in Chicago and make sure nobody gives you shelter for a week and nobody gives you any money for a week and see what you do. And to just treat people like that. I am not the most compassionate person in the world, okay? And there are some people that I have very little sympathy for. But the homeless, you know, this is not something that they do by choice. I don't care what Reagan says. I don't care what any right-wing schmuck says. No one chooses to be homeless. Well, yeah, I know, Agnes. I know that's what compassionate conservatives say, that homeless people do choose to be that way. Reagan said that. You know, screw him. He's dead and good riddance. Gene Kirkpatrick's dead and good riddance. I'm sorry. You know, those are the people I have much less compassion for. And Gene Kirkpatrick got to live a nice, comfortable life and never had to worry about whether she was going to freeze to death on a street somewhere. And she and Reagan and all these other guys, they have that attitude. Well, you know, if you're poor, you deserve it. If you don't have any money, it's your own fault. You know, I never understood that attitude. You know, in this country, if someone comes to you and comes up to you in the street and holds you up and rips off $20, that's a crime. Okay? But if someone swindles you out of $2 million, you know, or someone swindles you out of your home, that's perfectly fine. It's perfectly acceptable. Then we blame the victim. You know, well, it's his own fault for this. No. You know, people are ripping you off. People are ripping you off. And I just don't have an answer. You know, I wish I could stop people from ripping you off. And I wish I could stop people from dying in the streets of cold. I mean, I'm one of the lucky ones. I mean, as bad off as I have it, and I'm not exactly, you know, I'm not exactly living the high life here. I'm paycheck to paycheck like most people. Hell, I'm two paychecks away from being homeless myself. A lot of people are in that situation. I'm not saying that to get any extra, you know, sympathy for myself. And, you know, some people would say that my economic situation is entirely my fault. And I agree that it's partially my fault, but I think other people could be a little bit helpful. You know, employers or, you know, friends or relatives, you know, sometimes they could be a little bit helpful if they could. Anyway, I want to know what you have to think about all this. The number to call in is 1-877-443-2366. We will have a caller online, and we'll get to him after the break. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service, giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, they can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
If you or someone close to you has a hearing loss, here is some great news. Thousands of Open Caption videos are yours to borrow, and it's all free. Open Caption videos make it possible for the hearing impaired to understand television. The Caption Media Program offers classic Hollywood movies, special interest, and educational videos. Visit us online at cfv.org or call 1-800-237-6213. You can register to be a user and make your selections from our online or a printed catalog. It's just that easy, and we'll even pay for the postage. Open Caption videos are perfect for the classroom, your home, or even the workplace. The nonprofit Caption Media Program is funded by the U.S. Department of Education and administered by the National Association of the Deaf. Tell a family member or a friend about the Caption Media Program today. Bookmark cfv.org for free loan Open Caption videos or call 1-800-237-6213.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, we're back here on the Cup of Joe Radio Show. Once again, the number to call in is 1-877-443-2366. And yes, I know we have a caller online, but before I take that caller, I just want to say that today's show, I want as many people to call in as we can possibly get. If you've never called the show before, if you've never wanted to call in the show before, call in today. I want to hear from you because I want to know a couple of quick things about you. You don't have to be online for very long. All I'd like to know is, what are your ambitions in life? What kind of money would you like to be making? What kind of job would you like to have if you had total and free control of it? What would you like to do? And call in, 1-877-443-2366. Well, you don't even have to be on for a long time. You can just be on and let me know what you think about what your situation is and where you'd like to be, and maybe what you think the new Democratic Congress can do to help you along those lines. Okay, let's get to the phones, and my good friend Sarge down at the Gulf Coast. Hey, Sarge, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. It's 30 degrees here, man.
30 degrees? Why, you're having a heat wave, son.
Well, it was 26 this morning in Jackson County. I heard Jim Yancey say this morning. And now, remember, that is an area where 38% of the damaged houses in Mississippi were.
Those FEMA trailers aren't good insulation, are they?
They are very cold. I have talked to people, and they say that there is virtually no difference in the temperature outside and inside. So
that's sad. And, you know, I just read an article in the New York Times the other day about how millions and millions of money that should have been going to these people just got lost, wasted.
Yeah. It's like Jim Yancey said this morning. He was on Nova M, and he said that the money is just trickling down, that by the time it gets down to his level, there's not much of it left. And he said, I know that people have sent in a lot of money, and there's a lot of money supposed to be going down, but by the time it gets to the lower levels, it's virtually gone.
Everybody's got to skim their little piece off the top.
Yeah, and that's your capitalism hard at work, you know. I mean, not that I'm against capitalism. There's a place for it, but that's why it's got to be regulated.
Exactly, and that's why we're liberals. You know, we understand this as liberals, and it's an unfortunate truth that a lot of people don't understand that.
Yes, it is.
And I really feel for the people in the Gulf Coast, because a lot of these guys were, I wager a lot of these guys are pretty hardcore Bush and Republican supporters, and I'm wondering how many of them are seeing the error of their ways now, voting in politicians.
It's like I've said before, that there is a very hostile feeling that's going on, and it's not, and this is where it really gets sad. It's not just the Republicans, although all the Republicans are hard at work at being jackasses. A lot of the Democrats, especially the Democrats here in Mississippi, are being the same way.
And yeah, they're conservative Democrats, yeah.
Yeah, and that's what's really causing a lot of the bitterness, because it's like some of them have told me, it doesn't matter which one. Regardless of them, they're not going to do what they need to do by us. And that's what I'm trying to stop, is I'm trying to make sure that we make that not the case. And I'm staying on Pelosi. I'm staying on Clyburn. I'm talking to, oh, gosh, I guess I've talked to 30 different congressmen and 20 senators, and just trying to, and I call them frequently and try to remind them, hey, we got a problem here, you know. There's supposed to be an investigation. I'm hoping there will be. Pelosi's office has told me to be ready for a subpoena to testify. So I'm hoping that will be the case. But, you know, we still have people in tents, for God's sake. And
you don't want to be in no tent in 30-degree weather.
No. Well, even my twin sister in her house, she got back in her house finally. But it's just, you know, it's kind of a shell of her house, because there's so much on the inside that has to be done yet to get her house straightened back out. So I'm sure it was a cold night for her. I'll talk to her later tonight and I'll find out. But this is just, there's no reason for this. This is just not, there is no excuse. I was here during Camille. I know what Camille did. I know what Camille did to the worst part. And there is not that much more damage in the areas than there was after Camille. I mean, there's more, yes. But for the amount of damage that was done by Katrina and the amount of damage that was done by Camille, you put them in perspectives, this has been a total failure. There has been nothing close to success. This has been the most disgusting and the most shameful hurricane recovery I have ever seen in my life.
Well, you know, Sarge, there's one other group of people that you need to bring a particular message to. I mean, you know, talking to the senators and talking to the congressmen is great and all that, but, you know, what you really need to let the people know is that the only way you're going to get anything is to stand up for yourselves, get together, and fight, whether that means, you know, getting, you know, taking over one of the political parties down there and doing it that way, whether it means armed revolt if you feel like that's necessary. You know, I mentioned in my last show, the president of the AFL-CIO talked about the difference between union people and non-union people, and what union people understand that non-union people don't is that you have to stand up for yourself. And that's one of the things I noticed most about Southerners and Southern culture, is that they feel like somehow standing up, especially if you're standing up for yourself in a group, format, is there something wrong with that, that you should be, you know, Mr. Self-Sufficient and all that? And a lot of times, you know, that's just fine that you, you know, do things by yourself. But when something like this happens, people can't rebuild their entire life when everything depends on a small patch of land that they live on or a place where they work, and some natural disaster that they have no control over comes and destroys their lives.
Well, now, here's the thing that is going on. There is an undercurrent of people who, and I know it's happening on the Mississippi coast. I don't know if it's happening in Louisiana, but I wouldn't be surprised if it were from contacts I have in that area. But there is an organizing of people. There's a disgust, and it's to the point where there is talk of an open rebellion.
Good. I'm glad to hear that. I think we need a little bit of that, and I think people need to get more fired up, because quite frankly, I think you know, we have turned into what the right wingers called sheeple. You know, just you know, being led around, and you know, maybe it takes something as horrible as this happened. Maybe it takes something like this to get people fired up enough to do something real. I mean, the New Deal. I mean, that didn't happen because people were happy and consent. It happened because people were really pissed off.
Well, we Americans see everyone keeps saying Americans are by nature are not going to take this. Well, you know, I'm afraid that's incorrect. There are those like you and me and Bob and Mike Malloy and Dr. Mike Newcomb and stuff who really are not going to take it. They're going to stand up and they're going to raise their voices and they're going to protest. But we are more, I'm afraid, the exceptions than the rule. And that's what bothers me, because when they start fooling around with your vote, and they don't count your vote, when the Supreme Court appoints the president, you know, you have too many factors going on there that should just have everybody just totally on edge. But you don't have it.
Well, you don't have it. I think a lot of people, you know, we talk about George Bush being in a bubble, and a lot of people just live in their own bubble. They think politics doesn't matter, and that
and the news media
there's something... Yeah, that's right. The media does not help, because the media, you know, is going to sit there and parrot the corporate party line, and big corporations are behind a lot of it, if not all of it, and they have allied themselves with these religiously insane people across the country, and it's a very, very weird alliance, but between the two of them, they have a lot of political power, one side with the money and the other side with the numbers.
And
you still see people supporting Bush. I mean, you know, he's got a 30% approval rating. What I know is, who are these 30%? You know, who are these people?
Those are the hardcore, mostly religious right fanatics. At least my opinion. I think the majority of them are just those who are just so hung up on their religion or their party, whichever, or both, that they are not going to change their mind. It doesn't matter how hard the facts are against it. They are just not going to give in.
Yeah, it's called the type A faith, which is a faith that's so strong in you that even if you were presented with obvious, clear evidence of how wrong it was, they'd still continue to believe it.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can't imagine what George Bush has to do to get these people hacked off. Certainly Bush pissed off the moderates and those who were kind of on the edge, because those are the ones that voted against him in this last election, and the real reason why the Democrats won so many seats, and they would have won a lot more if we had free and fair elections. And I'm going to keep harping on that, and I'm going to talk about that later on in the show too. Sarge, we're coming in the bottom of the hour here. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Okay, your question of what would I do, my job and all?
Yeah, if you had your druthers, what would you do?
Just what I do.
Yes, what you do.
Just what,
well, what I mean
do.
Is, what kind of money would you be happy to make in a year?
Money,
and
money,
what kind of place would you like to live?
Money doesn't mean that much to me. It's just what I accomplish that's important to me.
Yeah, money doesn't mean anything. But if you wanted to live, you know, just you know, have enough to get by. What kind of money are we talking about? Are we talking about 25, 30,000 a year, 40,000?
I imagine 30,000 would be more than enough. But it just after I get to a certain point, then I start giving the money away, donate.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. I'm the same way.
I'm not a money person. Well, I'm gonna let you.
Neither am I, which is why I have so little of it.
You take care, buddy.
Take care, Sarge. Okay, we've got the bottom of the hour here. We got to take a break. I hated to cut Sarge off, but, you know, that's what happens. Give a call in, 1-877-443-2366. I want to know what your ambitions are. I want to know what kind of money you'd like to make and all that. I'm here for you for the next hour and a half. We'll be back.
You're listening to the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Huh?
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Head On Radio with Bob Kincaid.
When? Somebody tell me when the United States of America went from a can-do country to a can't-do country. Was can-do washed away in the fetid floods of Katrina? Was can-do killed in the stinking sands of Iraq? Did can-do get buried in the dank and gassy hole of Sago number 1? Where did the Bush administration go when they took can-do out and killed it? What happened to a nation that never said we can't? What happened to that nation that knew that the only thing it had to fear was fear itself?
Well, Mr. Kincaid, we've replaced that slogan. Now all we have is fear.
Head On with Bob Kincaid, 7 to 10 p.m. weeknights on the Head On Radio Network.
At this moment, more than 800 million people are hungry. Millions more live in poverty. And you wonder, what can I do? Join the thousands of caring people who let Heifer International be their helping hands in the world. Right now, from Appalachia to Zimbabwe, Heifer is helping thousands of families become more self-reliant through the gifts of livestock and learning. Heifer provides farm animals that produce milk, eggs, and other products. That means milk to drink and products like cheese to sell. Having income means families can have better housing and health care, and their children can go to school. And recipients share their success, passing on the gift of their animal offspring to other families in need, ensuring dignity, self-reliance, and hope for the future. Find out how you can make a difference today at heifer.org. That's HEIFER.ORG.
This is the Head On Radio Network, the Horn.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe radio show. Call me, as the song says. That's for those of you who don't know that song, that's a Debbie Harry song called Call Me. It's a karaoke version of that song to go along with all the other karaoke versions of songs that I use as my promos. Call me, the number is 1-877-443-2366, 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. I want to know what your ambitions are. If you've never called the show before, I want you to call in and I want you to tell me what kind of job you'd like to work, what you would like to do for a living, what kind of money you'd like to make, what kind of place you'd like to live in, and what you think the new Democratic Congress can do to help you out. along those lines. Before I forget, and before I pass it up, because you know how I get when I get talking about something and I get moving on. Yesterday was the 65th anniversary of the Pearl Harbor attack, December 7, 1941. And the date which will live in infamy is slowly becoming a date that's receding into memory. And a lot of people don't realize it or remember it anyway. I remember the first George Bush several years back when he was president was giving a speech on September 7th where he said, "Today is Pearl Harbor Day." And it's like, what? Everyone's like, what? It's December 7th, you schmuck. Of course, why should he care? His family was probably out playing croquet on the lawn that day. Oh, Mummy, look at that shot. Oh, dreadful, isn't that? What you say? They attacked Pearl Harbor? Oh, I hope they don't lose any pearls. Because, you know, we were going to go to the store the other day to buy some pearls. They cost $10,000, which is more than some people make in a year this time, at this point in history in the United States. Yeah, they really spoke like that, right? But what the hell did he care? And, you know, he even fought in the war, at least, for crying out loud. At least he fought. He was a pilot who ditched his plane, apparently. There's a lot of garbled reports about that. But apparently he, like, ditched his plane into the ocean. There you go, George. Way to go. Make us proud. Hang on a second. Like I said, my throat's not as bad as it was Tuesday, but I like to keep it hydrated. And actually, because I use these electric space heaters, and it tends to dry the air out, you know. And I think that's the cause of some of my throat problems, that the air gets dry. But anyway, I was talking about Pearl Harbor, and my dad. Those of you who don't know much about me, and I don't talk about it too much, but I mention it every now and then. My dad is a Pearl Harbor survivor. And he's 85 years old, and they usually try to gather in Hawaii once every couple of years or so, especially on the bigger anniversaries like the 50th and whatnot. But he belongs to an organization called the Pearl Harbor Survivors Association, which is slowly dying out, literally, because their members are old and just slowly dying off. In fact, according to the article in the New York Times that I read, there are fewer and fewer, and I'm trying to find the exact number here that they mentioned. There are fewer and fewer World War II veterans around. Let's see. By Pearl Harbor's 80th anniversary in 2021, the Department of Veteran Affairs estimates that the number of World War II veterans will have shrunk to 158,000. Now, the Pearl Harbor survivors met in Hawaii yesterday. For the last time, they're going to Hawaii, because most of them are too old to make the trip, frankly. And I remember my dad's friends out there. And, you know, because he used to take me to some of the events that they used to have. And this is back in the 60s and 70s and stuff like that. When these guys were in their, you know, 50s and 60s and still fairly, you know, in decent shape and stuff like that. And a friend of his out in York, Pennsylvania. And I never understood the relationship, you know, because my dad never really talked too much about those days and things like that. And I remember they did a reenactment of it. We went down, it was at the Orlando airport, and they did like a reenactment, and they had like vintage World War II planes, both Japanese and American, flying by. And they were simulating an attack, you know, with explosives and stuff like that. And they were trying to give everybody the feeling of what it was like to be there. And you can only imagine it. And there's a lot of false myths, and there's a lot of, you know, just misinformation that goes on around Pearl Harbor. The biggest one, of course, is that Franklin Roosevelt knew exactly what was going to happen and allowed it to happen, you know, because he wanted America into the war. And I always answer, first of all, that's not true. The real reason is that the admirals of the time simply did not believe that air power was very good. They, you know, they were old knees, and they looked with disdain upon the Air Force. And they had aircraft carriers there, but they really didn't use them for very much. And a lot of the admirals simply did not believe that the type of attack that the Japanese planned was possible. Of course, the Japanese proved them wrong. And if the Japanese had continued with their second wave, it would have been much more difficult for us, because they probably would have caught our aircraft carriers, and they would have gone ahead and bombed the repair depots. The repairs went on at a magnificent pace. Now, people talk about the Battle of Midway, which was our great victory in over the Japanese Navy, where they lost, the Japanese lost something like 3 aircraft carriers, just sunk. And the Japanese didn't have the resources to rebuild those as quickly as we could. And in fact, the Japanese should have surrendered after Midway. Midway was only like a year, less than a year, after Pearl Harbor. And we dealt them a major, major defeat. And a lot of that was because the Japanese didn't proceed with the second wave of attacks, which would have gone after the repair docks. And if that would have happened, Midway might not have happened, or it would have taken a lot longer. You know, the war would have dragged on a lot longer. As it was, we had an island hop practically to Japan. Hang on a second. You know, and there's, of course, the controversy about whether or not we should have used a nuclear weapon. I've always kind of felt, well, I think it probably was saved lives in the long run, because an attack on the Japanese homeland would have been monstrous. Would have been horrible, because the Japanese were fighting to the last man. And you got situations where people, they're sending their kids and their women and children out with tank mines strapped to them, just running out to tanks and blowing up themselves. This was, you know, on the islands while we were going through the islands. And they would have had to do that all the way through Japan. Now, maybe you can make the argument we could have dropped the bomb, you know, someplace that wasn't quite so populated. This is a good point. But the fact of the matter is, in the long run, it saved lives. And because we had liberals running the country post-World War II, and we knew how to treat the Japanese, in other words, we didn't, haul people off into secret prison camps across the world. We didn't pretend like they had no rights and that they weren't human. And we treated them with dignity. Hell, General MacArthur even allowed them to keep their emperor, who was probably guilty of war crimes of some sort. Because of that, the Japanese became great allies of ours. And still are to this day, despite all the bad feelings toward us around the rest of the world. The Japanese still have a great trust to us. And hey, so do the Germans. I'll never forget that scene right after 9/11, the picture, and it's online somewhere. There was a German cruiser that had come alongside an American cruiser, and all the German sailors were out on the deck in full dress uniform, and they had a big sign up that said, "We stand with you." The entire world was with us in the days right after 9/11. But because we had conservatives, because we had Republicans in charge, and in particular, we had the Bush administration, the current Republican leadership, and their financial backers, all they saw was an opportunity for them to push their agenda. Because that's basically how they always thought. And I've said this time and time again. These are people that the only thing that they know how to do is grab power. And the only thing they know how to do with the power once they have it is to grab more of it. Now, Franklin Delano Roosevelt and his people, the New Deal people, I don't doubt that they did some fairly scummy things from time to time. Although his administration, the New Deal administration, was one of the least corrupt administrations in American history. And FDR knew that they had to be that way, because it was the first time that the government was really stepping into areas that it had never gone into before. And he wanted to let people know that the government could work in good ways. Because the attitude prior to the New Deal, for the most part, was that the government should stay out of business. Which, of course, what that really means is that the government should allow a few people to just steal money from everybody else. That's really the goal of unregulated capitalism. Anyway, it's quarter to the hour. I still want to hear your phone calls. I want to hear about what your ambitions are. I want to know what you want to make in life, what kind of money you'd like to make. If you've never called up for crying out loud. Don't be shy. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
Harry Potter has given us all a unique glimpse at education the way it ought to be. Never once do Harry and his Hogwarts friends talk about skipping class, ducking tough instructors, waiving requirements, or shirking responsibilities. That perspective, be practical, get it the easiest, fastest, cheapest way you can, is what J.K. Rowling terms the Muggle approach to education. We're Concord University, and do we have a deal for you? At Concord, education's different than anywhere else around. There's a reason that Concord students get the best jobs, are sought out by the best medical, graduate, and law schools in the land. It's no wonder that Concord has been cited by U.S. News & World Report and by the Wall Street Journal. Where do I sign up? At Southern West Virginia's version of Track 9 3/4, all you have to do is believe, and believe in yourself. Concord University, an education you can put to work. 1-888-384-5249.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
This is the story about a group of kids who volunteered.
We fix stuff. Did some art projects with the kids.
Clean up the park.
We worked in the woods.
I just wanted to do something.
We fixed up his house.
Did something for the planet.
Hey, that was all I needed. And you know what? It was great.
It was a blast.
At first, they didn't know each other.
I didn't know anyone.
Well, that didn't last long.
This guy is really funny.
Me?
These are my new friends. These are really good new friends.
Are you into it?
Are You Into It is a volunteer program for kids like you who care. If you want to make a difference in your community and make friends, call 4-H toll-free at 1-888-77-YOUTH or check out our website at www.areyouintoit.com.
This definitely made a difference.
I feel like I can do everything now.
Yeah! A public service message brought to you by 4-H, the Cooperative Extension System, and the Ad Council.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, we're back here. It would help if I hit the button. You know, that works, doesn't it, Bob? When you hit the button to turn the mute off, that helps. How is everybody doing today? I'm Joe Vecchio, and I'm annoyed. But we all should be annoyed. You know, and that's just, you know, I get emails, and I get people talking to me, you know, and telling me, well, Joe, you know, sometimes you're a little bit too militant. You know, you're damn right I'm militant. My question to you is, why aren't you militant? Okay, granted, I'm embarrassed that I lost my baseball bat, but at least I had a baseball bat and I was ready. I got to buy another one when I get enough money for one. But the point is, there comes a time when even the most pacifist of people have to sit there and say, you got to fight back. And people take different methods of fighting back. Sometimes nonviolence works well, and that's the preferred method. Martin Luther King accomplished a great deal with nonviolent protests. So did Mahatma Gandhi. In fact, I would wager to say that the nonviolent protests were far more successful. But that doesn't mean that there doesn't come a point in time, if someone's got their foot on your throat and is crushing you to death and is choking you to death, then you got to fight back. And that's what I'm here to remind you. Now, before the election, I was screaming bloody murder that we were not going to win back the House or the Senate. even though I saw, you know, from the polls that I saw that I was probably going to be wrong on that, after a while, I still stuck to my guns, and I stuck to my guns on that for a very straight reason, is that I wanted to keep people aware of the fact that these SOBs are cheating. And the biggest thing that scares me, what scares me now is that I'm hearing from a lot of people that, okay, we've won the election, it's time to shut up about the D-bulb machines. And I'm like, no, you misunderstood what I've said from the beginning, and you're misunderstanding what I'm saying now. A lot of people just sat there and called me a quitter. So I suppose you think it's so bad, we ought to just quit right now. No, no! McFly! Wake up! That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying they're cheating, and they did cheat. The most obvious example of it were the 18,000 votes that went missing in Florida. That cost us another congressional seat. If we had free and fair elections in this country, the Democrats would have won 70 or 80 seats instead of just 30 or 40. You understand that? Now, to all the sunshine and lollipop crowd, I'm asking you, are we going to quit now? Are you going to quit? Well, we won the election, so now we don't have to do anything anymore. Oh, goodness gracious, it's wonderful. It's blue skies in the days. No, no. Now's the time you start working. The Republican machine has taken a hit, but it's not dead. You shot it in the shoulder. I want to cut its throat. I want that machine dead. I want the life stomped out of it. I want it to be a smear on the floor, something where people look back on history and say, what were they thinking? It doesn't happen with one election, people. And you can call me Mr. Negative. You can call me Mr. Doom and Gloom. But unless the Democratic Congress, the new Democratic Congress, takes serious action to fix these electoral problems, it's going to be a continuing problem. Because these people are still there. They never go away. You can never stop fighting. Because they never go away. They're there in every generation. And they've been there in every generation. I want to read to you this thing. I got this from Digby, but it's an article by Phil Ager. And I want to read this part of it. It's a couple of paragraphs here. And I really like what he has to say. So from the pharaohs of ancient Egypt to the self-regarding thugs of ancient Rome to the glorified warlords of medieval and absolutist Europe, in nearly every urbanized society throughout human history, there have been people who have tried to constitute themselves as an aristocracy. These people and their allies are the conservatives. The tactics of conservatism vary widely by place and time, but the most central feature of conservatism is deference, a psychologically internalized attitude on the part of the common people that the aristocracy are better than they are. Modern-day liberals often theorize that conservatives use social issues as a way to mask economic objections, but this is almost backwards. The true goal of conservatism is to establish an aristocracy, which is a social and psychological condition of inequality. Economic inequality and regressive taxation, while certainly welcomed by the aristocracy, are best understood as a means to their actual goal, which is simply to be aristocrats. More generally, it is crucial to conservatism that the people must literally love the order that dominates them. Of course, this notion sounds bizarre to modern ears, but it's perfectly overt in the writings of leading conservative theorists such as Burke. Democracy for them is not about the mechanisms of voting and office holding. In fact, conservatives hold a wide variety of opinions about such secondary formal matters. For conservatives, rather, democracy is a psychological condition. People who believe that the aristocracy rightfully dominates society because of its intrinsic superiority are conservatives. Democrats believe that they are of equal social worth. Conservatism is the antithesis of democracy. This has been true for thousands of years. And I agree with that wholeheartedly, and I've said so myself on my own blog, which, by the way, is cupojoe blogspot.com. I've said this, you know, the conservatives in this country were for the British during the Revolutionary War. They were for continuing slavery. They were for declaring war against the United States and starting a civil war. And yes, the South started it. I don't want to hear nothing that contradicts that, because it's just a lie. The South fired the first shot, and they instigated the whole thing to begin with. The conservatives, until we actually were at war, and in some cases even after we were at war with the Nazis, the conservatives supported the Nazis. The conservatives were against workers' rights. The conservatives were against civil rights. And the conservatives of today are against the democratic process. Now, you can be one of two types of people in this country, in the world. You can be one of two types of people. You can believe that you are a citizen of a free nation, which means you have a voice in how that nation runs. It may not be a very large voice, but it's a voice. And that you are part of a larger social contract. And you can believe that you are a free person. And work towards that. And work to build a more perfect union. Or you can believe that you are what you are and you deserve what you get because other people have determined that that's what your value is. You can be a free citizen or you can be a serf. Those are your basic choices. And it's easy to be a serf. That's a lot easier. You're free from responsibility. You take what they give you and you hope that it's enough. And sometimes, you know, if you have the right people in charge, hey, you know, throughout history there have been good kings and bad kings. I'm not saying all kings were bad. I'm not even saying the idea of monarchy is bad in theory if you have the right people. But the problem is you never get the right people. Whenever you have that much power concentrated in such a small spot, you're always going to get the worst kind of people who are out to get it. Why do you think so many kings and queens lose their throne by getting killed? And usually getting killed by their relatives. The Roman Empire, the Byzantine Empire, which was essentially the Eastern Roman Empire, the Ottomans, the Seljuks, medieval Europe, very, very few kings died peacefully in old age. Very, very few kings. Most of them, a vast majority of them, were killed. And a lot of those were killed by their own relatives because they wanted to be emperor. Sorry. But what's the function of government? What's the role of government? I heard Dr. Bill O'Brien talking the other day about how he believes that, you know, the government should get involved in food inspections. Well, yeah, I think that goes without saying myself. It's always a question of you know, what's interference and what's not interference. Certainly, I think the government, doing wiretaps, I don't think that's something the government should do. But should the government be there to inspect the food that we eat so we don't get sick of E. coli bacteria like what happened at some Taco Bell restaurants? What was it, 39 people got sick? How many got killed? I forget. Did any get killed? But that's what the government is there, to make sure this doesn't happen. And when you have government run by people who don't believe in the idea of government, or who believe that the only reason government exists is to help them and a few of their buddies, then that's what's going to happen. We're coming up on the top of the hour. We got the news coming up here real quick. And after my show, of course, is the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine. I'll talk more about that hopefully as we close out. But we got the news coming up. Give me a call, 1-877-443-2366. Let me know what you think so I don't have to waste my voice talking all the time. We'll be back. We'll be right back.
This is the Quality News Network. President Bush is meeting with congressional leaders this morning, saying he'll consider their ideas as he searches for a new strategy for Iraq. He's expected to make an announcement about his decision before Christmas. In Iraq, there are conflicting reports about an overnight raid and airstrike in a northern village. The U.S. military says it resulted in the deaths of 20 people, all of them suspected al-Qaeda operatives. But Iraqi officials say 32 people were killed, including 8 women and 6 children. Also, officials have announced the death of another U.S. soldier yesterday in a roadside bombing in Baghdad. 33 U.S. service members have been killed so far this month. At the Pentagon today, Defense Secretary Donald Rumsfeld held his final meeting to say goodbye to colleagues as he prepares to step down. He'll be replaced by Robert Gates on December 18th. In Beirut, the leader of Hezbollah is calling for a massive anti-government demonstration on Sunday. Today marks the 7th day of protest by Hezbollah supporters, who are calling for the Lebanese prime minister to resign. They want his government to be replaced by a unity government, in which Hezbollah will have a bigger role. At Guantanamo Bay, a group of 42 detainees has moved into a new $37 million maximum security jail. It's designed to restrict contact among the prisoners. The new prison has a capacity for 178 people. In Oregon, authorities say James Kim, the man who got lost in the snowy wilderness while trying to save his stranded family, died of hypothermia, though they aren't sure when. His body was found Wednesday, 5 days after he left his family in their snowbound car on a remote road. His wife and 2 daughters were found and rescued on Monday. On Capitol Hill, today is the last day of the Republican-led 109th Congress. Members will take up tax and trade legislation, as well as a bill to fund federal programs through February. Congressional members work just 103 days this year, the shortest legislative calendar in 60 years. This year, they were in session only Tuesdays through Thursdays, but incoming Majority Leader Steny Hoyer says next year they'll work from mid-Monday to mid-Friday. South Korea has arrested 5 people, including a Korean-American, and charged them with spying for North Korea. It's the largest espionage case there since 2000, when the two countries began political reconciliation. You're listening to the Quality News Network. Science and business news are next.
Most people would rather have a root canal than go to a dealer to buy a car. But you can turn dread into joy when you learn how to play the car buying game. Read the book, Right Car, Right Price, and you'll discover how the game is played and how you can win every time. Whether you're buying a car or a truck, new or used, Right Car, Right Price explains how to find and buy the vehicle best suited to your individual transportation needs. Auto Week called Right Car, Right Price the right stuff. So take the hassle out of car buying. Read Right Car, Right Price, and every time you get into your new car, you'll know you've got a great deal. Go online to rightcarrightprice.com to order your copy today. It only takes an hour to read Right Car, Right Price, and it just costs $10. We even pay the postage. So go to rightcarrightprice.com right now. It'll be one of the best decisions you ever make.
Drug maker Warner Chilcott is out with a chewable mint-flavored birth control tablet. The new product, called Femcon Fay, was introduced yesterday. FDA advisors today will consider the risks of drug-coated stents in patients with heart problems after a department analysis found there was a small but significant risk of blood clots developing. U.S. payrolls rose by 132,000 last month, an improvement over October. However, the unemployment rate edged up to 4.5%. Sony has just launched its new high-definition DVD recorder in Japan, the Blu-ray Machine. Singapore has announced its second casino contract to Genting International. Genting is partnering with Star Cruises and plans to lure visitors with Universal Studios theme park and huge outdoor marine park. A U.S. trade official is saying that there is a possibility that friction could increase next year in China's trade relationship with the U.S. That's partly due to uncertainty created by the U.S. congressional elections. Hewlett-Packard has reached a $14.5 million settlement with California's Attorney General stemming from its boardroom spy scandal. Light Sweet Crude is trading at $63.55. On Wall Street at this hour, the Dow is up 37 points at 12,315. NASDAQ up 14, S&P 500 up 4. You can hear more at QualityNewsNetwork.com. I'm Kimberly White.
Welcome back to the Cup of Joe Radio Show, the show that asks the all-important question.
Hey, you gonna eat that?
And now, back again for another hour of truth and fury. Here's the man your bosses hate, the voice of the working man's thinking man, Joe Vecchio.
Okay, here I am. I'm back on the show, and hope you're having a good day. For the second hour, boy, the time just goes quickly when I'm doing this show. You know, the time just goes quickly. And I'm happy for that, though, because it makes my times easier. Hey, before I forget, and I keep doing this, and I got to get a little bit more organized about how I do this. I keep saying I am the least prepared host of anyone on the Head On Network, and a lot of that is because I do work for a living, and sometimes I get caught up in my own life. And what was I saying? And I just forget to do things, okay? So, at any rate, what I wanted to say was, before I forget, I wanted to mention all my friends in the Head On Radio chat room. And if you're in the chat room right now listening in, and if you've never called up, you know, give me a call, 1-877-443-2366. I don't hear from any of y'all as much as I'd like, to be perfectly honest. I just like to talk to people. You know, sometimes I have days when I have a subject to talk about and I want to really get into it and talk in detail. And I want to try to get some guests scheduled and stuff like that, you know. But I have the most fun when I'm talking to somebody and I get to have a conversation like I did with my friend Sarge earlier on. So if you're in the chat room or you're listening out anywhere, and if you've never called the show before, I want you to call in. I want to talk to you. I want to find out a little bit more about you. Don't be afraid. Don't be shy. I'm not going to bite. This is Head On Radio. We are conversation radio. We are not confrontation radio. Okay? I'm not going to come on and snap your head off and do a gotcha. Oh, hi, Bill. You called in. Hey, did you stop beating your wife? No, I don't do that. The right-wing shows people do that. And you know, the difference between me... Hang on, let me take a drink here. The difference between me and a right-wing radio show host, the main difference, is that I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, I'm not going to just sit here and say something for the sake of getting, you know, ratings or for the sake of getting people angry. I mean, yeah, I do say stuff that gets people angry, but I'm not, you know, I'm saying it. When I say something on this show, I say it because I mean it and because I believe it. Period. It's not that complicated. You know? But, you know, a right-winger will get on there and he'll sit there and just say something to get people angry. So people go, oh, what did he say? Oh, I got to listen to more. That is unfortunately how most people are who listen to the right-wingers. Oh, I don't know nothing. At first, you didn't tell me. I remember seeing many, many years ago a news report about a Rush Limbaugh fan club, and they met in this restaurant. And all they did was they sit there and they had their little radios, and they put, you know, and they would listen to Rush. And God forbid anybody interrupt them. Oh my God! You can't let the voice of Saruman fade. You know, I remember that sequence in the book Lord of the Rings, more than the movie, where. After they had defeated Saruman at Orthanc, King Theoden and King Aragorn, well, he wasn't King Aragorn then, but he was there, and Gandalf was there, and several of the Rohirrim, and Saruman was, you know, still trying to weasel his way out of it, you know, using his voice. And it was like, you know, when he was speaking, it was, you know, the description was to the effect of, when he was speaking, you know, all other arguments, you know, washed away. But the second he stopped, then the spell was broken. And I think that's the way it is with Rush, and that's why he has to be on his people all the time, and why they have to have, you know, 15 hours or 24 hours of some right-wing, you know, schmuck spouting the same old stuff over and over again. And the difference between them and between me and between us here on the Head On Radio Network is that the reason why we're doing this is because we feel compelled to. Nobody here is putting away tons in a bank account doing this. I'm not, you know, laughing all the way to my bank at my listeners. I'm just a guy. I'm just a guy with an opinion and a means to share it. And people have helped me out. I've got my mixer from fans. I've got my microphone here from fans. I've got computer help from friends. You know, I don't need a lot. I don't require a lot. And I'm just, you know, I'm the type of guy that I'm just looking for control over my own life. And the reason why I do this show is because I get pissed off about what I see. And I get upset when working people do things that are against their best interests because they believe in some fallacy about a work ethic. The real work ethic is that you stick together. That's the real work ethic. You can work hard and believe in doing your job, you know. I go back to the speech by the president of the AFL-CIO that I mentioned in the last show, talking about the difference between union people and non-union people. And the other part of that was, you know, there in this world there are people who are givers and people who are takers. And there are some people in this world that can't own a big enough house or any number of houses. They can't own enough cars. They can't have enough money. There's a constant drive for it. And I understand what he was talking about because I've seen it in very small ways. When I worked as a salesman for Nextel, which was a nice job, and I really, at the time, I thought Nextel service was very good, and I believed in their product. And while I wasn't a good hard salesman, I was a decent salesman because it was obvious that I had an honest passion about the product I was selling. But there was a mentality among salesmen that there was always a fear of not being, you know, not getting one extra sale. Well, I got this big sale, but I could have gotten, you know, this much more. And there was always a fear that because they didn't get that sale, that there was something fundamentally wrong with them because they've had that drilled into their minds. You know, you understand the mentality I'm talking about? And that happens in small ways, and it happens in big ways. I mean, look at the Bush administration. Look at the people behind the Bush administration. Do you think they're satisfied with what they've got? No, of course not. They want more. What are they going to do with it when they get it? Well, they're going to try to get even more. That's all they know. They're takers. They're like a big black hole you have to keep pouring money into. And they don't really care who they have to step on, who they have to impoverish, who they have to leave homeless, who they have to drop off in a trailer after a hurricane. They don't care who they have to kill, just so long as they get that little bit more. There's something wrong with the entire fundamental concept of that. There's something wrong with it. And I think it's time we took a look at it and put a stop to it. I have a vision of a completely different type of society, but I'm not skilled or talented enough or smart enough just to make it a reality. A type of society where money, at least money as we know it, doesn't exist. Where goods and services are provided by other means. But I don't know. What I do know is that it's 9:15 and it's time for a break. Give me a call, 1-877-443-2366. We've got a Puffy AmiYumi break here, and we'll be back with more on the Head On Radio Network.
The United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights are problem solvers. They accept any challenge and approach every project with the highest of competency and training. UBC has thousands of professionals who can be at your service giving you the best in business anytime and every time. It's their job to provide manpower. They build partnerships based on respect and trust. They provide skilled, responsible millwrights and carpenters to meet the challenge of any project because they believe and what they're doing and are so very committed to getting each and every job done right. They include a clause in your contract that eliminates work slowdown and jurisdictional disputes because they believe that, as professionals, They can discuss and solve any problem while keeping your project on target on time. We'd like to take this opportunity to thank the men and women of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Millwrights for building the American dream and saving the American dream. Thank you.
There's one place on the web you can go that's so topical, you can apply it liberally. WD40.com. WDYAD40.com. Wad, Wally, and Dookie are there. They're working hard every day to give you updates in news, politics, and a great sense of humor. So stop on by and see the boys at WD40.com, a place where you can raise your voice and be heard. WD40.com. Your one-stop shop for all things progressive.
Did you know the University of Nebraska is a virtual world leader in the field of distance education? And that they bring highly interactive learning right into the homes of students in all 93 Nebraska counties, all 50 states, and 135 countries around the world using the latest computer website technology? I guess the lesson here is, no matter where you live, there's no place like Nebraska. The University of Nebraska, Lincoln.
The Native American Journalists Association is calling out to tomorrow's reporters, photographers, editors, and publishers to represent Native perspectives.
Today's agreement allows the Nebraska State Patrol and Winnebago Tribal Police to share enforcement.
The tribe is taking its concerns to the Bureau of Reclamation, which manages and
Native American inmates have filed suit against the prison.
Go to NAJA.com to learn more about membership and benefits. NAJA, raising the next generation of storytellers.
This is the Horn, the head-on radio network.
Okay, and we're back here on the Cup of Joe radio show. Okay, let's just go right to the phones. We've got Stephen on the line. Hi, Stephen, how are you? Pull up a chair, have a cup of Joe.
It's me. Hey, Joe. How you doing?
Pretty good. Hey, Steve.
I've been listening to your archives on the White Rose Society website. I don't know if they're still there, but I downloaded them some time ago. I just want to say, Joe, you're a kindred spirit. I know you lived in, was it Marietta, Georgia, for a while?
Yeah, in that general area. Yeah, Alpharetta.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm a little south of Atlanta, and originally a New York State native. And I can't agree with you more on most of your points, you bleeding heart liberal, maniac.
Yeah, you're a little wussy. Yeah, you're a liberal too. You're a little wussy.
Yeah, yes, I am. I'm a liberal, pacifist, terrorist loving idiot.
Let me ask. Can I ask you? You don't have to get too particular, but what do you do for a living?
Well, actually, I am unemployed, but I'm fluent in Spanish, and I was working for a couple of years in a manufacturing facility as a translator for a whole bunch of illegal laborers.
Mm-hmm.
You can imagine that. I was a supervisor and all-around translation man for about 100 really beautiful Mexican people, hard-working Mexican people. Slaving away
and they just want basically the same thing you and I want, right? To just make a living for themselves, right?
Of course. Yeah, it was really a microcosm of that whole cheap labor issue there, where I saw the management threatening everyone to fall in line lest the plant be moved to China and scaring them away from voting the unions in, which were trying to come in. And this is a Goodyear facility, by the way. But of course, they had half of the plant working, without through a temp agency. Everybody knew they weren't citizens. And, I was the one actually who had to turn away all of the actual people from that area in Georgia who were just looking for a job, American citizens who maybe hadn't graduated high school. They wanted to, just get a good factory job where they could buy their kids some milk and some PJs, you know, or whatever, and I had to turn them away time after time, maybe 10, 20 of them for every position that came open, and they would say, we need an amigo, we need an amigo. So I was the go-to guy to bring in an amigo and turn away all the, you know, hardworking, or, you know,
I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
I know what you're saying, and you know, and I really, and I know you're not saying this, but a lot of people blame the Mexicans for that, and it's not the Mexicans' fault. The Mexicans are just doing what everybody else would do in their situation. It's the employer's fault, and it's the fault of a government that likes to set workers against each other, because that, you know, that makes them feel good, and it keeps us preoccupied on other things. Let me ask you now: you've been unemployed for how long?
Oh, about a year.
Wow, how are you getting by?
Well, I've been intermittently employed here and there to keep afloat, and my girlfriend's a real great help. Been a real great help. I'm basically not settling for it. And listen to your archives. Actually, was one of the things. You know, I'm not settling for whatever I can get, and I'm gonna look for a good, you know, $30,000 to $40,000 a year job like I had.
Well, if you're bilingual, dude, you should be doing better off. I mean, I like to joke that I'm bilingually illiterate. I can't read or write in two different languages.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's I don't know. It's the type of thing where I just paid attention in high school, and luckily I had 5 years of a good teaching with a good Spanish teacher, and it stuck with me. But you know, I've really been trying some entrepreneurial type of things, and I started working with a crazy farmer out here, an organic farmer trying to sell his products on the web and whatnot, and try new things. But I'm just not going to go back into being a subservient yes man again, you know. And
I'm proud of you, man. I'm proud of you.
Yeah, and I really, you know, it's sad. I just had a fellow over here. He's another, you know, kind of just a countercultural guy, let's say. An acquaintance, not a real good friend, but he was over here, and we were thinking about starting our own little company, you know, and let's do it our way and be our own boss and things, and you know, his greed just quickly took over, and he wanted to be a little dictator on that too, and it's just sad. It's almost, it seems pervasive, you know, everywhere you see. People.
That's a shame, you know, because people have, you know, you'd be happy making, you know, $40,000 a year, right? I mean, that would be a real good salary for you, wouldn't it?
Oh, yeah.
And you know, that's, and in realistic terms, that's not a ton of money. I mean, $40,000 a year is basically like maybe what my dad was making back in the 60s, relatively speaking. You know, he was making $650 an hour. Mm. But that was enough to support him and you know, support a family of five and retire very well. Of course, he worked for the city, so he had a union pension along with Social Security. Mm. But, you know, you're not looking to run other people's lives. You just want to have some control over your own life and some financial security, right?
Yeah, you got it. I mean, I made that much, you know, for a couple of years, and it was real nice. And I'd never made that kind of, never been in a supervisor or management level job before, and got to see a lot of things. It opened my eyes, really, laid things out as to where the power lies, and you know, what really needs to be done on a personal level, and you know, in the country, you know, multitudes of times on personal level, you know. People really need to start sticking up for democracy in the workplace. People really need to start saying, I'm not going to take this. I might need this job. We got to figure out ways to support ourselves in telling these companies, no, you know, just no, we're not going to sit here and have you, you know, force us to work in such and such condition and just take it. You know, we're not going to sit here and have you dictate to us that we're not cutting the mustard, and yet when we have a gripe, you know, it's just, you know, zip it or get out.
Right. I think you see a lot more people just need to stand up for themselves, and that's, you know, democracy in the workplace is one way of putting it, but the truth of the matter is it's just standing up for yourself, right?
Sure.
And the only power you have is when you have a bunch of other people, because it's easy for them to fire one person, but let them be in a situation where if they fire one person, the whole plant walks out on them.
Yeah.
Then they'll think twice.
That's the problem. People like they have an attitude like yours or like mine. I bet you've probably run into it a lot, and I've heard it so much that people would just say, well, you know, on a particular issue or matter, if I have a grievance or an observation or anything, I've so many times heard, well, you know, we can easily get someone else in here who won't present this problem to me that you're presenting right now, you know, and you know, you're just a body, and the unfortunate thing is they're right. There are, you know, they will easily find that next person who will just sit and take it.
And the only way we can solve that problem is to have people who are going to say, no, I'm not going to take that job that you're just firing this guy because you think he's a little bit too much trouble. You know,
yeah,
and if that's the situation, then
it
won't be so easy to fire people, right?
Yeah, you got it. I mean, it's let's get off onto the was that Bob Kincaid that answered the phone when I called?
That was Bob. Bob's producing the show today.
I thought so. It sounded like his voice. I didn't catch him in time. He had transferred me to the hold option. But hey, Bob, how you doing? That's great. I've listened to Bob and
Bob's a great host. We're all great hosts here on the Head On Network. I mean, we got Bob. We've got Dr. Bill O'Brien that does the show this time slot on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursdays, and we've got Guy James who called up the show on Tuesday, and we've got Bruce Birch, and of course the great Bob Kincaid, who is the founder of the Head On Network. So he and his lovely wife Agnes handle all of those production duties.
That's fantastic. You know, I have a little bumper. I won't spill it here, but I ought to send that along to the Horn. It's a little
sure
the Head On related audio snippet. So I'll go ahead and send that along. Where should I send that?
You can go to Bob at Head On Radio Network.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Bob at Head On.
Well, you know, it's nice talking. Listen, if you ever get the urge, you know, why don't you move the hell out of Georgia?
Yeah.
And you can maybe come up here to Chicago.
If I might ask, how did you end up down here for a time, and how long did you live down here? And
I lived down there for 12 years. Uh-huh. I lived down there for 12 years, and I was invited up there by a friend of mine who I haven't spoken to in a while. I need to talk to him. And he said, look, I got a place to stay, and if you want to come up here until you get your feet wet, I'll let you do that. And in fact, it was kind of a civilization how I came up here. After my wife passed away and the job situation was looking worse, I just decided I needed to change, and I'm really loving Chicago. It's a very different attitude. Have you lived in Georgia all your life?
No. I've lived down here about 8 years now. Originally,
oh, that's right. You said you were from New York State, yeah.
Yeah, near Buffalo. Between Buffalo and Rochester.
Okay.
Yeah, Batavia, New York, the booming metropolis up there where I hailed from. But, yeah, it's kind of a similar situation. I had a friend of a family offered me a job down here, down south, and get away from the snow of Buffalo snow and try something new, and it has been working out quite well for a while, and you know, I've gained some different experiences I know I would not have had had I not moved here. But I think I think you might be right. Well, it might be time to move on.
Well, if you want, my email address is joe@cupjoe.com, and you can write me, and we'll see if maybe we can set you up with something. Listen, I hate to cut you off,
sure,
but we're coming to the bottom of the hour here, and we got to take our break.
Hey, and that's Bob.
It was nice talking to you, Stephen. It's great to have you calling, and I'm glad you finally called in the first time. And keep calling. You know, I like to have regulars come in and talk.
I will.
Okay. Take care. All right, we got the bottom of the hour coming up. We got a half an hour left. There's still a chance to get in here. There's still some time to get in on the action. 1-877-443-2366. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We had a good talk with Steve there and my friend Sarge Curl earlier. We'll be back with more on the Cup of Joe Radio Show here in the Head On Radio Network.
Great universities never set out simply to reflect the communities in which they exist. Rather, they serve as seedbeds of change in an ever-changing world. They take pride in being places where truth is freely sought, where inquiry is encouraged, where new ideas and new ways can develop and flourish at the expense of the old. When a true academic community, instructors and students together, acts and expresses itself freely, without fear, all of society benefits. Concord University is already using this new set of challenges as opportunities to serve in ways that strengthen its dedication to community, its commitment to service. In graduate education, in professional services to working professionals, in highly respected fields of study where standards remain high, in continuing to place graduates in the very best professional and graduate schools in the nation, Concord University remains the very best higher education bargain in this region. Don't ever allow yourself to accept anything less. Concord University, still since 1872, an education you can put to work. For an appointment, call 1-800-344-6679.
Recently on the Guy James Show on the Head On Radio Network.
If you have tuned into this program by mistake right now, and you are a Republican, a right-wing Republican specifically, before this program is over, I do want to warn you, you're going to think that I'm the devil. You're going to think I've got horns and a red cape because I hate the Bush administration and everything they stand for. So be warned right away, okay? You're all warned right now that that's where we're coming from today.
Don't miss Guy James, weekdays, 3 to 5 Eastern Time, on the Head On Radio Network.
We are taking to the streets, sidewalks, paths, and parks across Canada in support of ALS research and to raise money to provide quality care for the thousands of Canadians living with ALS and their families. Please join us. Walk for ALS is a fun, family-friendly event occurring in more than 60 communities across Canada. We are walking because ALS is a devastating disease. The average life expectancy is only 2 to 5 years.
We are walking because every day 2 to 3 Canadians die from ALS.
We are walking to provide hope.
We are walking for those who can't. Most people with ALS will lose the use of their legs in the first 2 years of the disease. What would you do while you still could? For more information or to register for the Walk for ALS, visit www.als.ca/walkforALS.
This is the Head On Radio Network.
Okay, and we're back here for the last half hour of the Cup of Joe radio show. And my time does fly when you're doing the show and when you're having fun, I'm telling you. It really does. It seems like I just started the show, and yet we're almost over. And it's kind of a shame, actually. But, you know, I like the time that I do the show. And let me remind people that if you have promos or bumpers or anything you want to send, the email address to send them to would be bob@headonradio.com. That's Bob at, the little symbol at, you know, like, you know what I'm talking about. If you do email, if you haven't done email, how the heck are you listening to this computer? Because if you've got enough technical skill to be listening to the computer via screaming audio, like you are now, you should understand email, right? So it's bob@headonradio.com. And, he will take a look at your proposals, laugh at them, and then maybe use them. Not kidding. Bob takes them all seriously. In fact, I've been lazy in putting together promos. Well, lazy isn't the right word. I've just been friggin' busy. You know, I get into these grooves where I just decide I want to do nothing but work and concentrate on that. And then I get in these grooves where I don't want to do nothing. You know, and it comes and goes, and that's okay if you're independently wealthy, but if you're having to work for a living, that cannot be a good thing sometimes, you know. Because, you know, the work requires consistency. And actually, at work, I've had a few days where I just seem to be doing everything wrong. And I really hate that. It makes me feel bad. And then I had a couple of days off sick, and It's just the lack of focus, or you get kind of used to doing things a certain way, and then you get a different type of job that requires something different, a little more detailed, and you get lost in it. And you just won't, and it just won't click to do the job the right way. So I really hate it when that happens, and it does happen with the type of job that I have, which is really kind of a slow, not slow, it's just repetitious. Because what I do for a living is that I scan legal documents. I work for a very nice company called Digital Technologies Incorporated. That's treated me fairly well for the most part. I wish I made a little bit more money, but hey, you know, it's a nice steady job, and it gets busy and it gets slow sometimes. And when there's work there, and if I don't have anything else going on, I like to just basically concentrate on work. And I love the radio show, and I love doing the radio show, and I would do more for the radio show if I had more free time. Because when I get home from work, I'm tired. I'm sure a lot of you are the same way. And writing and doing things takes a lot of brain work, and brain work is tiring. Just because it's not physical doesn't mean it's not hard. And I'm not always in the mental mood to be writing stuff. That's why on my blog, which, by the way, is cupofjoe.blogspot.com, there are times when I'll go, three or four days without a post. Simply because, I don't really have anything to write about. It's not that there's not enough news out there. The fact of the matter is a lot of the other blogs are covering it far better than I have, and if I have my own little thing to add to it, I will do that. And that reminds me, let me talk about this. I'm going to go slightly off the topics that I've been talking about, but I wanted to talk about this because there was a discussion about it on another blog, and it just kind of popped in my head, so let me get it out there while it's here. Robert Altman, the film director, died recently. And Altman is one of our great directors, really. And the film he's probably best known for is MASH, which spawned the TV series. And by the way, Altman didn't really care much for the TV series. And there's my little trivia question. If anybody wants to call in and answer the trivia question, here's my trivia question. Who was the only one who was in the movie and then in the TV series? There was only one actor or actress that was in the movie and in the TV series. Now, no looking at Google, no looking at on the website. If you know it, if you want to call in, we'll get you on the air and we'll talk to you. I don't know. I don't have a prize. This is not that kind of a radio station. I don't have a prize. If you know that, at any rate, it spawned some discussion of a blogger who talked about MASH. He didn't use this term, but basically, but when MASH jumped the shark. And he talked about it when he first saw a Hawkeye with a beard, and his beard hairs were gray. And he talked about how what a lot of the show was about was here was this young guy, and you don't think about Hawkeye as being like that. If you look at the show, and if you know what I'm talking about, Hawkeye is basically, at the beginning of the show, he's basically like right out of college. He's a kid, thinks he can take on the world, and the war is giving him a sharp dose of reality. I mean, that's a big, important part of the story. Hang on a second. I got to fix this chair before it falls down on me. I got to nail that wooden. This is like an old... I don't have a regular computer chair. It's like an old wooden wicker-style chair that keeps coming out of its slot, and I've had to nail a couple of legs together. Anyway, and it's basically about him maturing. And the later shows weren't really as good as the other shows. And it kind of got old after a while. I mean, as liberal as I am and as liberal a show as that is, I felt like they were getting a little preachy, okay? And by the way, has anybody noticed that? And this other guy brought it up too, and some other people. I thought I was the only one to notice how Radar gets more childish as the series goes along. If you look at the first season of MASH and you look at Radar, he's got some girl problems and stuff like that, but he's no innocent little kid. He's a wheeler and dealer and a little conniving little guy and kind of creepy, actually. But as the series goes on, he gets more and more childish. Which is weird because they all look obviously a lot older, But I always had a bigger question, and it always kind of bothered me. Now, if you look at the movie, there's a lot of differences between the movie and the TV series. And the biggest one is how Frank Burns is. In the movie, Frank Burns is played by the great, great actor Robert Duvall. Robert Duvall is one of America's premier actors. Has been for many years. Been in some of our best movies. Godfather, Godfather Part II, The Great Santini, Apocalypse Now, where he played the crazy helicopter pilot. You know, I love the smell of napalm in the morning. Smells like victory. You know, but he was also in MASH, and he played Frank Burns. And that Frank Burns was a very, very creepy, you know, scary Frank Burns. And if you've never seen the movie, they basically, Hawkeye and Trapper, who were played by Elliot Gould and Donald Sutherland, work to get rid of him. They drive him crazy, basically. They take they found out that he and Hot Lips were having an affair, and while they were doing it, having sex, they broadcast that out to the entire camp. And then Hawkeye goes over there and just starts taunting him. You know, what does she sound like? You know, does she make funny little noises, or is she a screamer? And, you know, Frank attacks him, and, you know, because of that, they take him away. They get rid of him. But the Frank in the TV series, played excellently by Larry Linville, because he did a very good job of it, in fact, he did too good a job of it for his own career, is a very childish person. And I always thought to myself, doesn't Frank ever get to grow up? Frank never changes throughout the series. He's always the same, you know. And it's not just that he's mean or snotty or aristocratic without having need to be aristocratic, you know. It's just that he never grows up. He never changes. He never learns from anything that he does. And I thought, you know, you're in a war for a couple of years at least. You would think that you would have some sort of change in the guy, especially when you're living in a situation where the kind of death and destruction is all around you. I mean, there's a lot of soldiers who are really, really gung-ho about stuff, and yet once they get into the fighting, they turn into, I don't want to say pacifists, but they get a better understanding of it, because the carnage always looks better when it's being played up somewhere else, you know, when you're not actually involved with it. And it always used to bug me that Frank Burns didn't grow up. I always thought that he should have went out doing something really, really heroic, or something that was, I don't want to say against his character, but something that signaled that he was going to change somehow. And they never did that. And I'm wondering if a lot of conservatives just simply resent, you know, how Burns, not, you know, Burns in particular, but how they were treated along those lines. Now, granted, you know, they bring a lot of it on themselves, because, quite frankly, if you look at the blogosphere after several years, a lot of these people have never grown up. They're not only still defending George W. Bush, but they're working overtime to try to defend our treatment of people like Jose Pizzillo, who's been driven insane by the treatment he's been getting, without a trial, without any kind of substance, without any kind of charge being posed against him. I mean, Jesus Christ, you put someone in jail, you should at least charge him with a crime. But it doesn't occur to these people. Well, you know, he's a dangerous terrorist. Well, who says he's a dangerous terrorist? The same people who've been lying to you for the last 3 years, and who've been, you know, whose lies you've been believing because you want to believe, because you want to believe in your own little superiority. And Digby, the great writer on Digby's blog, Hullabaloo, you know, she, and I believe Digby's a she put it perfectly. A lot of these guys would blubber and cry for if they got the same kind of treatment for 5 minutes that this guy's endured for years. I mean, no wonder he's been driven insane. He hasn't been able to see anybody. And he gotten to the point, was it Padilla or another guy that we had tortured with his attorneys, you know, when he finally got attorneys, his attorney says, you know, the problem is that he doesn't even necessarily believe that we're his attorneys. That he thinks that we're some sort of plot. I think there's redemption for some people. I think some people are waking up. I think there's some people who are far gone over the end. But damn it, I always got upset that they never tried to make some sort of amends with Frank Burns. And I got to make amends with the break. Last chance to call in. 1-877-443-2366. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. We'll be back with the final segment of the Cup of Joe Radio Show here on the Head On Radio Network.
Sweetie, I love you, but those jeans have got to go.
Yeah, I know. Grab me a pair next time you go to the store, would you?
No.
Uh-huh.
I'm not going there anymore. I can't stand it.
What do you mean?
It's just awful, honey. The only smile in that building is that big yellow face. Everybody else looks miserable, and I can't find anything there that's made in our country. That bothers me.
Well, nobody makes clothes in America anymore.
Au contraire, mi amigo. There's a ton of American-made clothing at No Sweat.
Well, where's this No Sweat store? Out at the mall?
No, silly. I found them at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. There's a link there. I already ordered some great workout gear, and I also got you some new jeans. They'll be here in a couple of days. Surprise.
HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
Uh-huh. Just click on the No Sweat banner. You're right there. Helps union workers and helps support America's other liberal network. Cool, huh?
I knew listening to the horn was a good idea.
Whose idea?
Your idea, dear. All the good ones are.
Union made? No sweat. Great prices? No sweat. Great looks? No sweat. No sweat at HeadOnRadioNetwork.com. Click the banner. Do the right thing.
Are you still looking for weapons of mass destruction? Concerned about the future of the Supreme Court? You want to know how government bureaucrats are changing Social Security, overtime pay, or the environment? Maybe you just want to know if the president's lying to you, or when our troops in Iraq can finally come home. I'm Mark Levine. I've got the inside scoop. When you want to know what's going on inside the Beltway, you need a Beltway insider. Someone who's worked in the government and still has sources willing to give you all the news from Washington the government does not want you to know. So for lively debate, reasoned opinion, detailed analysis of history and policy, or just a point of view you don't hear expressed in the mainstream media, tune in to the Inside Scoop. Feel free to call in too. Agree or disagree. All opinions are welcome. It just might make you think. That's the Inside Scoop, weekdays at 2 p.m. Eastern, 1 Central, 11 o'clock Pacific, right here on the Head On Radio Network.
In the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, you can help people in need. Here are a few suggestions. Contact your local Red Cross. Donate blood. Call 1-800-HELP-NOW. You can also donate money. Go to redcross.org. And as well, you can contact your local church, synagogue, or mosque and find out what they're doing to help people affected by Hurricane Katrina. Thank you for your help and get involved.
Hi. My name is Joanne, and I have mannequinism. Well, I did have it, but I'm not a mannequin anymore. Doctors said over 75% of my body turned into plastic. They said it's because I wasn't active in my community, because I didn't vote or volunteer or I don't know. All I wanted to do was cry, but I couldn't because I had plastic eyes.
Protect yourself from mannequinism. Log on to fightmannequinism.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network.
Okay, we're back for the last 15 minutes or so of the Cup of Joe radio show. Immediately following me on the Head-On Radio Network is the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine. I don't know if he's live or if it's a rerun today. I'll find out in a couple of minutes, I guess. I'm sure Bob will let me know. After that, we have. Let me see. And again, I don't have the schedule in my head right offhand. Okay, he's. Okay, he does a rerun on Fridays. Okay, but it's always a good show, so you can always listen in. And Mark always has a good show. So even if it's not live, listen in. Stay tuned. And after him, let me see if I got this right now. It's Guy James, and then Bruce Birch, and then Bob Kincaid. Is that correct? Did I get that right? I hope I got that right. But you got Inside Scoop, you've got Guy James, John Fox, and then Bob Kincaid with Head On. And yes, that is Bob answering the phones, says Stephen. Well, is Bob answering the phones? Oh my God, I've got to talk to Bob. Bob's a nice guy. And I'm glad that he has me here on the show. But he and Agnes are the producers. He's the guys that run the show. And then they have Zach that helps out from time to time. We all work very hard here on the Head On Radio Network. Because... Bob's getting a swelled head, he says. Well, you know, we should all have swelled heads, you know. Because I think we're all doing a hell of a job here, I think. Even on days like this when I'm just kind of rambling on, and I usually do that because once again I am the least prepared of the hosts, and I got to work harder to get more guests. I know, but you know, what the hell. You all enjoy the show anyway, which I'm glad for. What was I going to say? You know, they had Bush had a press conference with Tony Blair, and somebody remarked that how whenever Blair is with Bush, Blair sounds even dumber. You know, and it just annoys me to no end to see that happen to Tony Blair, who was a politician I had a great deal of respect for until he just started to turn into George Bush's toady. And I realized when George Bush first went into power, you know, it's natural that, you know, the Prime Minister of England and then the President of the United States get together because we're two allies, even though we were formerly a British colony, as those of you who know history know. And, it's something, okay, here's a president, here's a relationship. But then Bush started, you know, 9/11 happened, and Bush started talking about this and that, and Tony Blair just went along with it. And I just, for the life of me, I simply cannot understand that. But here's old George Bush. And I like what Chris Rock had to say about this. He said, you know, a black guy with a C average couldn't manage a 7-Eleven. A white guy with a C average gets to be president. And that's the difference in this country, you know. That's as huge of a race gulf that we have here in this country. But there's Bush up there talking about, well, I know it's tough in Iraq. I know it's tough in Iraq. No, you don't. You have no friggin' idea. But we will win. It's like, do you even know what you mean by that? Do your supporters have any idea of what victory means in Iraq? What the hell do they think? What fantasy world are they living in? I mean, I just don't understand what they want to accomplish at this point. It was Paul Krugman or Frank Rich the other day had an article that said, who wants to be the last man to die for George Bush's ego? Because this is entirely Bush's war. It's Bush's war and it's Cheney's war. But he's the president, he's ultimately responsible. This is his war. He fought for this. The guy who was the Secretary of Treasury, Treasury of the Secretary. I mean, almost immediately when Bush took office, long before 9/11, they were talking about, you know, trying to find ways to attack Iraq. I mean, was it a personal thing? Were they out to either steal the oil or to keep it off the market so that their oil is worth more? The oil finger scam, you know, as the Guardian put out, I think it was Greg Palast who wrote that article. And you wonder about that. But the truth of the matter is, we're at a certain point where we know the whole thing is a disaster. Everybody knows it's a disaster unless you work in the Washington Press Corps. Or if you're a right wing guy, you're blaming the American people now. You're just a bunch of chicken shit. You didn't want to kill everybody in Iraq. Excuse me. Sorry about that. I almost started to cough. Yeah, it's incredible. All the right wingers, how tough they are. Where the hell are they fighting? Most of these guys are perfectly within the age group to join the military. You know, it's did I say something? Did I miss something? Did I say a word that I wasn't supposed to say? I must have said it surreptitiously. If so, I apologize. Ah, okay. That's the word. All right, I won't repeat it. The chicken hawks. But they're just a bunch of cowards. I mean, these guys could all join the military. What's stopping them? Because they don't even believe in what they're saying. If they believed it, if they really believe it, then they'd be out there fighting. Well, I got my life to lead. Well, you know what? The people who fought in World War II, they had their lives to lead, too. The people who were drafted to go to Korea, they had their lives to lead, too. It was only in Vietnam when we really started to question, why the hell are we still doing this? It was only in Vietnam. And people screamed at them, you know, dirty freaking hippies. You know, you don't want to go and fight. Well, you know, give us a reason to fight. and anybody who's against the war is a coward. Well, if you're for the war, why aren't you out there? You know, if you're for it, why aren't you out there? It's like Bush, you know, George Bush. When did he ever have to face any serious combat? Gets in a cushy Air Guard unit. Now, people complain about Bill Clinton, but Clinton was at least very, very clear. He didn't think the war was right, and he didn't think that people should be going out and fighting it. He wasn't cheerleading the war. He was saying, you know, this is stupid, and I don't want to have any part of it. I question the entire policy behind it. And apparently, some of the news I've read was that there was an actual plan to bomb Iran, but a lot of the generals refused. And I'm glad, if that's the truth, then I'm glad that we're finally seeing some sense from, and God help us if the only sense we're seeing is people in the military. It's unbelievable that people who build their careers, whether they like it or not, their basic career is trying to figure out how to best kill the enemy. I'm not saying all of them enjoy that. And they're the ones saying, you know, we're not going to bomb Iran. And everybody was talking about whether they're going to do this, whether they're going to do that. You know, first of all, they're not as bad as we think if they already have it. I mean, if they were as bad as we thought, you know, I'd be dead right now, or at least off the air. But you get up there, and it's like, you look at him, and you think, can a guy possibly be that stupid? And then you think, well, yeah, maybe he can. I happen to think George Bush is a very stupid person on several levels. Is he good at grabbing power? Yeah, but that doesn't necessarily mean anything. That's not an indication of anything except for just being ruthless. And you can be smart about how you get power, but the really stupid people, like I said, don't know what to do with the power once they have it. Except to grab more of it. And all the lives that got wasted, I mean, yes, the almost 3,000 American soldiers, yeah, but the tens, hundreds of thousands of Iraqis who were guilty of nothing but living on land we wanted or just being in the way for corporate interests. It's a long, complicated, hard road towards real democracy in America, real freedom in America. And it's a road I'm going to keep fighting for as long as I can, and for all of us here in the Head On Radio Network. However naive it may be, and however much that we're not profiting from it, we're doing this because we're compelled to do this. Just as George Bush is compelled to be stealing our money, which is what he does best, he and his friends. All right, looks like we're right about at the end of our rope here. Once again, I want to thank Bob Kincaid for producing the show, and Agnes, who dropped in earlier on, say hi. Inside Scoop with Mark Levine is next. And then we've got Guy James, then John Fox, and then Bob Kincaid. I want to thank everybody again, and I hope you enjoyed the show, and I will be back here on Monday. Until then, there's a lot of stuff to do, so hey, get back to work. Bye. I want a cup of Joe, I crave a plate of Dave, open a jar of John, don't put anything on. I'll chug a jug of George, I'll dip a mug of Doug with the creamer of Steve. How many more does that leave? Give me a pot of Scott, heat up a pan of Stan.
situation there is bad. The Iraq Study Group's bipartisan 10-member panel came up with 79 separate unanimous recommendations on how to change the president's policy in Iraq, which the group concluded was not working. One of those recommendations is a call for the withdrawal of U.S. combat forces from Iraq by early 2008. President Bush has already rejected that idea. There are several other studies of the situation in Iraq underway, including ones by the National Security Council, the Pentagon, and the State Department. President Bush said he would not make any decisions until after he gets all of those reports. Afterwards, the president plans to give a major speech to explain any change in his Iraq policy. Wednesday was one of the deadliest days for U.S. forces in Iraq. The military now says 11 American troops lost their lives in several separate attacks. In the first week of December, at least 31 U.S. troops have been killed in Iraq. Late yesterday, the Senate gave near-unanimous approval to Robert Gates to be the new defense secretary. The vote was 95-2. Members of the 109th Congress may vote on a massive tax and trade package before ending their lame duck session. The legislation would normalize trade with Vietnam and extend tax breaks that affect millions of Americans. However, the controversial bill would also open up oil and gas drilling in more than 8 million acres of the Gulf of Mexico. Saudi forces battled gunmen today at Jeddah, a port in the Red Sea. The Interior Ministry reported that two Saudi security forces were wounded in the shootout. The gunmen were believed to be Islamic militants. A Middle East scholar resigned his position from the Carter Center in Atlanta after controversy over former President Jimmy Carter's latest book on the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. The professor accused the former president of, quote, factual errors, omissions, and plagiarism, according to the Washington Post. Today is the 65th anniversary of Pearl Harbor. Nearly 500 survivors gathered in Hawaii today to commemorate that day of infamy. Many veterans who are now in their 80s fear that this will be the last time they will be able to gather